You're listening to Season 2, Episode 24 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang. Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Gotham Writers for sponsoring today's episode. They teach creative writing classes in New York City and online and have built an incredible writing community. Be sure to hang around at the end of the show to find out why Gotham has earned an amazing reputation within the writers community. Guess what, guys? We have Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter, producer, and fiction writer Amory in today's episode. Amory just recently released her newest EP called Drive, and it was just named one of the best R&B albums of 2016 by Rolling Stone magazine. Amory also has a highly anticipated villain-themed anthology called Because You Love to Hate Me. The collection of stories is Amory's brainchild, where she pairs some of today's most popular young adult authors with influential booktubers, and it's set to publish in July 2017. In today's episode, we discuss the fast-growing world of booktubers and its influence on young readers around the world, why it's crucial to push past our limits to grow as writers, why Amory specifically chose a villain-themed anthology, and we unpack her writing process and habits, and of course we dive into the creative process of her music career. Now let's jump right in. Hey guys, I am so pumped to have the one and only Amory with us on the show today. Amory, what's up? How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm feeling great. Thanks for having me.
How did you fall in love with writing and why do you write?
I began to write my first stories when I was like 7. And that's when I began writing fairy tale stories and comics, and I would staple them together. I also wrote a newspaper too. That was the thing. I wrote a newspaper. And a little newsletter, you know, it was like off the computer, and I wrote a newsletter, and my friend and I, my best friend, we both love to write. You know, now I actually look back and I'm like, oh my goodness, those were writing days. I didn't realize. And I
would look at little like writing workshops.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, sometimes you don't realize the habits you have as a child. We would have playtime. We'd do random things. But a lot of the times we would just go to her house or come to my place and we would sit down, work on our own work. We also had a collaboration that we did. It's a comic book called Kids. And we would both draw and we would both write the story and we would pass it between each other. And then we'd also work on our own things. And then we just kind of check in on each other like, hey, how's it going? What's going on in the story? And we were like 7 and 8 at the time. But I didn't realize later. And I was like, oh, and then I looked at some notes, like some revision notes I had for this very implausible story. But it was a story that I thought, it felt very realistic at the time. And now I realize that, you know, children can't be off on their own looking for jobs at the age of 10. But at the time, it seemed realistic. I was looking at the revision notes and I was like, oh my goodness, I still revise like this. Like the star, the points, it's so weird. But I can't remember not writing, actually. I always did it.
A lot of listeners will most likely know you from your singing. Was singing your first love or was it writing?
Reading and writing was my first love. And I guess reading came a little before the writing part. But reading and writing, those were always like whenever, you know, you had to list your hobby, it was always reading and writing. And I love to sing too. And I would do that as well. So I consider it like my other love.
Okay, I gotcha. So knowing that is your first love, reading and writing. So you knew your whole life, like growing up, middle school, high school, that you wanted to work towards a degree in creative writing?
Well, you know, yes, it's funny because now that you mention it, I don't know what I was thinking I was going to be when I was in middle school and in high school. I mean, I knew I was going to go to college. I was working all this time. I was very into academics. My parents were very big in making sure that we focused on our studies. We couldn't go out during the week. We couldn't talk on the phone during the week. We'd only go outside Friday through Sunday. And then the rest of the time we had to stay inside and study. And if we didn't have homework, we had to study something.
That is when the Korean side comes out.
Yeah.
Okay, Asian culture represent right here. Oh my goodness, I'm the same way.
You feel me? My mom loves, like she loves that I'm writing. And the music stuff, she's always been supportive. But honestly, the music stuff, she could just be like, okay, you can drop that. Because she was like, you sure you don't want to be a professor? Why don't you? I'm like, mommy, I don't want to be a professor. Like, I think all Korean parents want their kids to be professors.
Seriously?
She just asked me that earlier this year. I'm like,
Oh
Mommy,
my
I don't want to be. She's like, you can write and be a professor.
Oh.
She's like, you're really good at that. And I'm like, I do like that, Mommy, but I'm not doing that with my life, okay? I was like, you've been asking me this every year. My life. Like, she cried when I decided to become a singer.
Oh
She,
my
like,
God,
literally
are you serious?
Cried.
Oh my
Yes,
God,
my
that's
mom
so
is,
cute.
my dad's old school, very like, hey, you need your books, or, you know, we would
But I'm
ask
sure he
somebody.
understands the music side, and he was pretty damn proud, right?
Oh, yeah, he definitely, he loved it. He was really excited by it. But then when I was pursuing it professionally, he was like, okay, great. And my mom was like, good, but she was a little more like, you're going to be a singer? I thought you were going to be a professor. And what about your writing?
So freaking
Yeah, you
cute.
know, moms, they're just like, my mom is very much a Korean mom. Like, she still tries to force feed me. She's still like, eat this. If you love mommy, you'll eat this. I'm like, Mommy, stop.
It's not that you transitioned because you still love music and you're still working on your music, and we'll dive into that as well. But now that you've highlighted more of your writing skills, you have your anthology coming up, which we'll also dive in soon. I'm sure your mom is like super excited now, right?
She is really excited. She's
Aww.
really excited by that. She's really happy that I'm writing, because one of the things with music business, and you know, like, I've been traveling a lot. Sometimes it's more hectic than others, but she's always worried. She's just like, oh, all that traveling, are you going to sleep? You're getting your golden time. Make sure you eat. If you love mom, you'll eat good. I'm like, okay, Mommy. You know, she loves the writing part, and she also knows that that's what I always love to do. She
That's
knows that that's
true.
my happy place.
That is
So
true. That is true. Daughter, like mother, daughter knows her mother best. Whoops. I meant mother knows her daughter best, right? Well, that too, both ways. But yeah, I love that. Now, backtracking, you weren't really sure what you really wanted to be. Not a lot of authors were aware that being an author can be a full-time career. Were you aware of that? Or was it more so like, oh, I love to write. That's a fun dream.
I wrote, but it was really for fun. I don't think I ever thought one day I want to go into the store and have my books on the shelves. I would try to sell my newsletter, you know, for like 10 cents. I would just make up the news. And it was like a bus of children ran off the road and exploded. All I knew as a child was that that's the way the news is. And then when I was in seventh grade, I was thinking maybe I might want to be a geneticist.
What?
I'm still into genetics. I started this whole saga. It's like a story with 40 generations. And you go through kings and queens and
That's
mermaids and
awesome.
fairies, or all these different ethnic groups. But I never wrote it down. It was a story I told to the kids I used to babysit. I remember thinking, I'm so interested in genetics, because it was in part of my story, that it was 40 generations, but it was mostly in pictures. I had the story in my head, so I would draw all the people, the family trees, a special jewel or a crown, or like a mermaid tail and a splash of water. And I was like, oh, it's so interesting. Like, okay, I had all these different mixes. There was a mermaid mixed with an octopus, and you know, all these different things. And I was like, I might want to be a geneticist, but I can't be a geneticist because I know myself, and I'm going to be a mad scientist. I was going to be like, it was like a path of villainy. It was going to be bad.
I love that you mentioned villain. You're currently working on an anthology that pairs young adult authors and booktubers. There's collaborations with 13 best-selling authors and 13 huge booktubers who have huge following. Can you please walk us through how this idea, first of all, came about? Because it's freaking genius.
Thanks.
I'm totally nerding out. I want to talk about this.
Well, first, it's really like 12 best-selling critically acclaimed authors plus one, because I'm neither of those things, but I'm contributing.
Girl, yes,
a story.
You are.
So I'm working on it.
But you will be, yes, very
yes,
soon.
Putting it out there. You know, I love BookTube. First, I fell into BookTube when I decided I was going to write and be serious about it. I threw myself into it. I learned everything that I could about the business, everything I could about how agents work and what they do and how to query and do all of those things. And in the meantime, what I somehow discovered was the bookish community online and Goodreads and blogs. And then I discovered YouTube videos. Before that, I never watched YouTube videos for anything other than just something someone might send me or something. Started watching author lectures. And then somehow I stumbled upon the bookish community on YouTube. Didn't know that existed. And I just started watching that every day. And then I decided I wanted to jump in, join in on the fun. I would never have a channel if it weren't for BookTube, because I love sharing great beauty finds and style tips and just life stuff in general. So I joined. Now I can't even remember how it happened, but my agent and I talked about doing like an anthology or a project, and then I wanted to figure out the theme for it. Okay, villains, villains. I had the title, boom. And then it was like, all right, then we talked about doing something different. And then it's like, wait, how about doing BookTube, like adding BookTube in there? I was like, awesome. So we really collaborated on figuring out how it was going to work. And my agent, Joanna Volpe of New Leaf Literary.
Love her. Just had her on the show, by the way.
Oh, you did? Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
Joanna's freaking bomb.com. She is such a badass chick running her business. So that's amazing. I love you guys. You're a power team. I'm so happy to hear this collaboration between you two.
I queried her and I already knew she was my dream agent because I really did my research. So I was like looking at everyone's acknowledgement, seeing who repped who. This is back in 2012. I went to literaryrambles.com just to get the scoop on everyone and basically just cyberstalk everybody. So I told her when I met her, I was like, I kind of know too much about you, like in a creepy way. I'm sorry. She's really smart. She has a great eye and ear for story. Just looking at her progression in her career, and I was like, she's hungry. She's about it. Like I can just tell. She came up with that writing prompt idea. And we're like, all right, great. So then it just came time to just pick the participants and see who would want to be involved. I approached some of the authors that I really admire and the booktubers who I followed and found enjoyable as well. And I also added in a couple of book bloggers because I had discovered the bloggers first. I wanted to really incorporate them into the project if they were interested. I was a little nervous about approaching the authors at first because I didn't really know most of them. I knew a few, but it was like, all right, I don't want to be the crazy person on Twitter like, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Because I know sometimes people try to reach out to me like on Twitter or Instagram. And it's just like, okay, but I'm like, I have a website and they're my people are on there. Please go through my people.
Seriously.
That sounds crazy, but and I try to make sure I'm respectful and I go through people's people too. But if I'm talking to like if an artist and I'm like, oh, I want to do a record with such and such. Let me see if they want to do a verse on this or whatever. I just kind of reach out to the artists themselves.
Right.
So I wanted that approach with the authors without looking like the bugaboo person. But it worked out really well. And I made some new friends.
I freaking love the fact that you mentioned that you queried and you researched the hell out of your team that you wanted to put together. It's very freaking admirable. I just have to put that out there. You don't really see that often with people who already have an established platform.
Writing is something that I did way, 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 way back in the beginning. So I don't look at it as, you know, some people would look at, say, a brand extension, which I'm not saying that's good or a bad thing. I personally don't read those books if I feel like I'm getting that vibe, just because I'm just not interested in that as a reader. So how I approach it is I am a writer. That's what I do. And people, a lot of people don't know that yet. And I guess they're getting to know that now. But it's kind of like what Joe Hill said. Joe Hill's Stephen King's son. For a long time, no one knew that he was actually Stephen King's son because he didn't want someone to just say, hey, we're going to publish you. This is great, Stephen King's son. Boom. He was like, if the work is not there, don't do that because that's not going to help me in the long run. I want my work to stand up, just to be able to hold its own. So I feel the same way. It's not that I thought, oh, well, I guess I'll just roll in there and be like, hey, I'm A. Marie. Well, let's go. Let's do this thing. Hot on the presses. No, I didn't think that. And I wouldn't want that anyway, because at the end of the day, the reader does not care. And Jo told me, she was like, you know, if you couldn't write, I wouldn't have represented you. And I was like, I know that. And I'm happy about that because I wouldn't want you to.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate compliment. Just getting to talk to Jo through her episode, just hearing how she goes about finding these talents, it's remarkable. I mean, we all know that she found Veronica Roth of the Divergent series. You know, that's freaking humongous. They have Leigh Bardugo, Victoria Aveyard, all of these incredible writers that are just like blowing shit out of the water. Whoever she brings on to the team, you know she means it. Hearing that you did send sample of 10 pages and then she asked for a full manuscript. So that means that you have a manuscript of your own novel then, correct?
It was a project that almost went. I'm actually revisiting that one. It was YA, but I think I'm going to rewrite the whole thing, but I think I'm going to do it as an adult. And I actually finished another, almost finished as far as in revisions, but I have everything with the anthology going. And then I have two YA, like I've written like 4 or 5 stories in the last 4 years. Yes. One of them she hasn't even seen yet, but I was like, no, I'm like, trust me, I need to finish doing what I need to do to it, Jo, and then I'm going to let you see it. So she hasn't seen that one yet.
What is it that you're interested in writing and what are you drawn and gravitated towards?
I love science and I love fantasy as well, but for a long time, like I only read nonfiction. You know, I love quantum physics and history.
What? You love quantum physics? What?
Yeah, like the thought of it, you know, all the possibilities.
Wow.
If I get blown out into space somehow and we're stranded on this ship, look, I can figure it out. I read Neal Stephenson. I can figure out somehow we can survive. Because I remember reading like a few parts about this nozzle.
You're very observant and intelligent reader. I like that. I'm a slow ass reader. I will be that person that will read a sentence 5 times over if I'm in love with the sentence.
Me too.
But wait, hold up. How long does it take you to finish a book?
Oh my God, if I'm sitting there for an hour, like I might have read like 50 pages, anywhere from 40 to 55 pages.
Okay, girl, get out of here. I would be lucky if I got past page 2, all right? I'm not even kidding. I am like, let me highlight this. What's that vocabulary word? I don't know this. Where's my dictionary.com? Oh, I should have installed that app. Oh, damn, now I got to pull up my laptop. I'm telling you, it is step A through Z when I'm trying to get through 2 pages. It's so bad. So I just get my girlfriend. I'm like, girlfriend, can you please help me read this book? And she's my spark notes. With all your reading, right, whether it's literature and or books, which reading have you done, like a particular one, if you can remember off the top of your head, that's helped you with your own writing for your books?
So many great novels. Like I read a lot of craft books. I read a lot of screenwriting books just to understand story. When I read a good book and I close it, oh, I clap. I stand up and I clap. Because I'm like, you did that. Like Vicious by E.E. Schwab. I had to clap. I had to applaud her for that. Nosferatu by Joe Hill. Station 11. Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future by A.S. King. Before I Fall. Americana. I have a shelf called Books That Feed Me. And they're books that teach me. I learn from everything, but they're books that just especially teach me and where I just want to shake the author's hand. And I'm like, yes, yes, thank you for this. So many, there's so many great books. You know, oh, The Vegetarian by Han Kang. I just read that recently.
Ooh, what is that one about? I've never heard of that one.
It's really slim. It actually just won the International Man Booker Award. So that's what brought it on my radar. Basically, it's translated from Korean. It's written by a South Korean author. She was doing some work in the States, but she wrote this novel in Korean. It's basically about a woman who decides to become a vegetarian one day because of a dream she has. And it's about taking control of her own body. You see what's going on with her husband. I don't want to spoil it, but there's a lot of sex, blood, control, power, and familial guilt involved, all rolled up. And this very extremely, extremely small volume. It's 100-something pages. I don't know how she fit so much story into 100-something pages, but she did. It blew me away. I read everything. I have YA, adult, sci-fi, adult, literary. Like, literary is a genre. I don't believe it's like, oh, literary. You know, that goes back to the whole thing we were talking about earlier. Because I think you can learn from everything. I mean, there's just so much fantastic stuff. But that one's an amazing read.
I know that you talked to Joe, your literary agent, about it. And was there something specific, do you remember, that just sparked that idea?
Well, villains was something that I really wanted to do because that's something that's a running thread in my work anyway, is right and wrong. What is right and wrong? I'm starting to wonder if I know there's a word for it. I do have a clear sense sometimes of what I think is right and wrong. There is that side of me. But there's another side of me that believes there is no right and wrong. There's no good and bad. There just is. You could probably say, hey, Amory, I want you to head up this righteous brigade. And I'll be like, yes, I know exactly what everyone should be doing, what they shouldn't. And then you could say, hey, Amory, I want you to be the head of this really terrible, brutal, crazy, we're going to dwindle the world's population down to 500,000 people. Yes, I know exactly how we're going to do that. Great. I can think on both sides. I had this conversation with Joe before, and she was like, so you don't believe that some things are evil? And I was like, I don't really think I believe in evil. Maybe I believe in people who are sick sometimes, but I feel like, I don't know, is what is good and what is bad? And then do the ends justify the means? I argue that sometimes maybe the ends do justify the means. For instance, we sip our lattes, we live in this country, we enjoy our freedom. And then we're like, oh, those countries shouldn't be like that and they shouldn't do this. But it's easy to say when you're sipping your latte because every country or every nation, every empire is built on blood. It's easier to say later down the line that that's so bad. So like I could make the argument, hey, I want to create this empire. I'll kill a bunch of people now. You won't like it. Don't worry. We'll work it out in the end. Like 200 years from now, we'll be good. You look at history, you can't argue with that, really. But I don't know if the question is what is right and what is wrong, or if the question really is just what is and what do you have to do to get to where you want to go regarding civilization. And, you know, so sometimes I feel like I have like two different people in my body. My husband's like, you're a walking contradiction. He's like, you can cry at commercials because you're like, oh my goodness, he's helping the lady across the street. And I'm like, it's so sweet. I love human people. We have goodness in us. And then I'll watch something else and I'll be like, no, they want revenge. The child is going to come for revenge. They have to kill the children. Kill them all. And I'm like, because they'll rise up. They'll rise up and seek vengeance 15 years from now. They must kill everything. I don't know, but I'm not wrong.
How are you raised? Were you raised with a Buddhist upbringing? Were you raised with no religion or religion? Or, so I feel like a lot of times that does affect a lot of how people think and how they see in their perspective.
My parents are very into their beliefs. I've always had questions. I've always challenged things. So I was always the person in Sunday school saying, I'm sorry, wait a minute. And they're like, yes, Amory. And I'm like, so they said that God is on our side. But God told her to go into the king's tent and cut off his head and bring it? I was like, that doesn't really seem fair to the guy who got his head cut off. Are they sure God said to do that? It sounds kind of weird to me. I'm like, Amory, that's just part of what happened. And oh, Jesus and Satan are walking in the garden. But doesn't that kind of mean Jesus is kind of friends with Satan a little? I mean, they're having these conversations. He's not getting rid of him. And they're like, okay, Amory. And then my dad's like, all right, let's pray. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll pray, mommy and daddy. But do you realize that we say amen? Because it comes from like, kind of like Amun Ra, the sun god. And you do realize that this is it. And they're like, okay, Amory. So, yeah.
Do you feel like you're drawn or gravitated towards a specific religion or a specific thinking of the way life should be? Or like, you know what I'm saying? Like how you walk
my personal,
in life. Yeah, your personal belief.
My personal belief, it's funny because my grandmother was Buddhist and I tell my mom all the time, I was like, if anything, I've likened myself more. I think I have more of that teaching, but I haven't studied Buddhism enough to say, yes, I would do that because I don't believe in religion. I consider myself a spiritual person. My personal belief is that, you know, we're here on this earth. We're here to somehow make it better, but to also learn and experience. And I do believe in reincarnation. I don't know if that's what happens to everyone, but I believe that somehow we've been here before, we're here again. There is another aspect of the bigger picture.
How your outlook is about spirituality and not really tying yourself to any religion, which I can see why you would almost gravitate towards science fiction, connecting the dots a little bit. But do you also notice themes overall in, like, you know, like what you're talking about, which reminded me so much of reincarnation, not exactly like Buddhist reincarnation, but it's very similar where the whole like teaching each other kind of thinking. Has that shown up in your writings?
I don't seek to answer questions. I like to ask questions. I like to pose the question because I don't know what the answer is either. Even with villains, I always felt empathy for the villain. Not just because they excite me and it's like, they do. I'm like, oh yes, the villain. But it's not so much like, oh, they're so bad, I love them. It's really because I feel like, what is a villain really? Today's villain is tomorrow's hero. Today's rebel is tomorrow's freedom fighter. It's kind of like getting into someone's head. And the thing is, there isn't even really an answer. But they're questions that I like to ask. Like, where does that line reside between morality and immorality? Good and bad? Where is that? And those are the questions that I like to ask. Like, what is ethical? What isn't ethical? I don't seek to answer these. I don't know. Are you familiar with Jem and the Holograms? Jem was really Jerrica Benton. And so Jerrica Benton had this alias, Jem. And then her group was the Holograms. And they raised this money to create this orphanage and to keep it running. And then you had the Misfits, this opposing group. They're their rivals. And they're like this evil record company. And then, you know, the Misfits are always causing a lot of drama. And Pazzazz, she's like the terrible one. She's the one that you love to hate. But I always felt so bad for her. And that's the thing, I always felt so bad for the villains because I always felt like Tony Montana in Scarface. Yes, he went through some things. Yes, it was brutal. But Scarface is a story of the American dream. He is going after the American dream. Some people may look at him as being a psychopath, killer, murderer. I understand that. But he's still trying to achieve something. So I felt like my empathy was greater than some of the things that he'd done.
So now how are you involved as well? Like, are you able to, is there room for you to be hands, like really hands-on with this anthology project?
I'm cracking that whip.
That's right. You're like, no, hurry kidding. Up the deadline.
I'm kidding. I was telling my manager and my sister, who's my lawyer, and my husband's my manager.
Your sister's your lawyer?
Yeah, my sister's my lawyer.
Dude, that's
my husband's
badass.
My manager.
Your husband's your manager?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, we have our entertainment company together. Since my second album, we've been putting out my music through our company. It's a lot different than what I was doing before. I mean, yes, you're writing, that's creative. You're singing and you're performing, that's creative too. But if it's like, oh, details, emails and such, no, not to me. Those don't come to me. I don't deal with those. So I didn't really have to deal with all those logistics. But with this project, I've been extremely, I'm the main person dealing with all the logistics, making sure that things are on time and whose story is in and whose story is it has yet to be turned in. And
are you there as well, almost like an editor? Like, can you shift the direction or no, you kind of want to leave it organic?
Like with the prompts, sometimes let's just say if someone else had a similar prompt, I make sure, hey, this is someone else kind of has this, or this is a little tight. Maybe we should open up the prompt a little bit more. Those little things with the stories, I read them. I have like my thoughts and I share my thoughts with, you know, my editor and the editor of this project and also my agent. And I'll write those down and share them. And it's up to the editor to see those. And then she has her own thoughts as well.
Are you allowed to release any names yet about who's involved?
Oh, yes, actually. Okay, so I can tell you who's involved. On the author side, we have Renee Adier, Saman Chainani, Susan Dennard, Sarah Ennie, Marissa Meyer, Cindy Pond, Victoria Schwab, Samantha Shannon, Adam Silvera, Andrew Smith, April Genevieve Tuholk, and Nicola Yoon. So amazing, amazing nice. Authors.
Very strong.
So, I'm so, so happy that they all agreed to be part of the project. Hell and on yes. The booktubing side, we have Benjamin Alderson, Benjamin of Tomes, Sasha Alsberg of A Book Utopia, Whitney Atkinson of Witty Novels, Tina Burke of Christina Reads YA and The Lushables, Katrina Feeney of Little Book Owl, Jesse George of Jesse the Reader, Zoe Hurd, Read by Zoe, Samantha Lane, Thoughts on Tomes, Sophia Lee of The Book Basement, Raylene LeMay, Padfoot and Prongs 07, Reagan Perus of Perus Project, Christine Riccio of Poland Bananas Books, and Steph Sinclair and Kat Kennedy of Cuddlebuggery Blog, and they have a channel as well.
These are really strong people in your list. What made you want to reach out to these people specifically?
So I really wanted a great mix, and I also wanted to include, as I said before, like people who blog more so. They're all people that I really admire and I enjoy. So it was putting together this was really easy. There are a few people where I haven't, like Renee's book, I still have yet to read it, but I've read like pieces and we have some things in common too, a similar background. She's also half Korean. What I did read of her story, like the sample, it's so beautiful, her writing. I just really felt like, oh, I would love to see what she would do with a writing prompt. For the most part, I've read everyone's, at least one or two books from them.
How was your schedule like?
I pretty much would wake up early, do like 4 hours of writing. I had to start getting up at 4 o'clock. So I would get up at four. Yeah, just sort of wake up a little bit and then start my writing time, then go to the studio. When I don't have studio days, I was writing 13 hours a day. Now, 2 hours is not a great writing day at all. That's kind of bad. And I'll be grouchy that day. But I try to write every day. And when I'm not writing, that means I'm like researching something or planning out on the whiteboards or whatever. But I usually write every day 4 to 12 to 13 hours, depending, but at least 4, because I usually have a 2000 word count day. I go by word count, but I do usually, yeah, like if I'm drafting something, it's like 2000 words every day. That's what I'm trying to hit.
A lot of people hit writer's block, including myself. It's very difficult for me. Like I start losing track and I'm like, okay, I got to check that email. So I got to get back to it. Or it's like, oh, I have work to do. I have other things to do. So it's like always these things popping up for me. But that's so awesome that you can sit down.
No, you're right. That does happen. And it is a distraction. And that's one of the things too, with even like doing the anthology and having so many emails. I had to put myself on a thing. Like I was like, my morning times are not going to be for that. It's so hard because I usually want to answer things right away. But I was like, I'm going to get up really early. I usually like to get up before the sun comes up. My husband's the same way, so it makes it easy. And we, on a good day, we're up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. We go to the gym. We're back in at 5:45, 6 o'clock, showered, boom. He makes the smoothies. We are ready to go. And I don't get on social media and I'm not answering emails because I need that fresh mind time. And I won't get to them until at least noon. You have to be protective of your writing time because it's so easy for writing time to be chopped up into little pieces. And, you know, and there are things that you have to handle. It's very true. If anyone is like, what do I need to do to get the things done? My number one thing is wake up at 4:30. It sounds crazy to me, but if you get up at 4:30, You almost have a full day by the time it's noon. Everything else on top of that is like icing. You
That's
almost feel, you
true.
actually almost get 2 full days. I always recommend people just try it and see if it works for them.
Girl, I would need a nap, like a 3-hour nap in the middle of the day. Do you take naps?
I don't take naps. I'm really funny. Like, it's like I'm not ready to relinquish my control of the day.
That's all, you know what? That's a conversation I had with my girlfriend recently because I love my naps. Although I am one of those people like where 15 minutes do not do it for me. I need like at least an hour or I am a cranky mofo. It's like I am hangry or something. And so my girlfriend, I'm like, why don't you take a nap? It's better for your body, your mental state. There's a study that says you live longer. I don't know how true that is, but I'm gonna take it and run with it. And she's like, I feel like I'm missing out on things. You know, everybody's having fun or like they're getting stuff done, but by the time I wake up, it's all over. So like for her, it's almost similar to yours where it's like relinquishing her agency, her power of getting shit done for the day. When you're telling us about your process that you have a whiteboard where you write your notes. And I'm loving that because I always love, you know, about writing processes. What is it that helps each author? So whiteboards are your go-to then.
Well, I write, that's usually in the beginning of a story when I'm really figuring something out and like before I'm drafting. And sometimes I might write like the adult story that I wrote. I didn't do any planning or anything. I actually just had a moment, had the first beginning scene, and I just wrote it. And then I was kind of scared because I was like, I don't even know where this is going, but I know it's going somewhere. I'm just not sure. But then it might be a different kind of story. I can whiteboard this out, hit my points. I know there are certain things that have to happen. Let me just look at it. And it's going to change as I'm writing, but it's good for me to just figure it out.
And just to see it.
Just to see it. Yeah, and I write on paper, but the only thing is then some of the pages are like, oh, well, nope, I changed that and I changed this and now I just have all this
But
pile.
what if you have like way too many notes, but you need what's on the whiteboard and you can't erase it and you need more space? Do you have another whiteboard or do you do like index cards? Like what helps you mentally?
I have 4 or 5 whiteboards.
Damn, okay, you have enough
Yeah.
space. Never mind. Girl got backup. It's okay.
I'm with like 4 or 5 whiteboards, and I use them for main things like what is the magic system? Figure it out. What is this? Okay, how's this gonna happen? Oh, okay, got it. But then I actually, when I'm creating everything and it seems set, then I'm writing it down. I'm either putting it in the computer or I'm writing it on paper. But sometimes I'll kind of loosen something and I'll just go to paper and just write it. So I kind of use a mix. I do it all. I do that. I do index cards, but index cards are more for when I have it figured out. And mind you, every story is not like that because every story is different. And sometimes people feel like, oh no, this story, this didn't work. And then this one is like, hey, when you go in to record a record, you might go in there and be like, oh, I hear this beat and boom, I know exactly what's going on there. Or there is no track, so I'm going to just hum this melody and this is what it's going to be. Or, oh wow, this is an amazing thing, and I have the melody, but I don't have the lyrics. It's just different with every song. So I feel like that's how it is with stories. If you're a writer, you're a writer because there's something inside of you that demands to be released. And I'm like, don't go to the keyboard and say, oh, no, you go in there, you sit down, I'm gonna kill it. For the most part, if you're writing, I wouldn't even say every day, but regularly at whatever that means, if you're writing and you're continuing to write, you're going to get better and better. And it's going to seem like you're not getting better because you're noticing more and more flaws, but that's only because you have more knowledge now. You know more. You know more enough to know when something is not so great. But that means that even though it looks like you're just getting worse because it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. That thing that I wrote like last year, I can't even believe it because my eyes have been opened to the terrible stuff that I was doing. But you actually are raising the bar. So you're
Yeah.
getting better and better. And I just talk to some people who say, oh, I write, but oh, I don't know. And it's like, I don't know what it's, I'm like, no. I just grab their shoulders and I'm like, you go in there, you sit down and you kill it. You can do this. You can do this. All people, we're all creative. You never meet a kid who's like, I don't know how to play pretend. Every kid knows how to play pretend. Like,
That's
we
true.
all have that creative energy in us.
Yeah,
You
it's
know what I mean?
innate. It's totally innate.
And it doesn't mean everything's going to be hot. You might look at it later and be like, this was not so great.
But it's a
But you
stepping stone. It's a process.
yes, it's a process. Go in there, be confident that you can make it happen, that you can bring it onto the page. I just feel like you just have to have an attitude in life anyway. I know it sounds a little like, you know, those guys, they walk on the stage and
Yeah,
they're
like
like,
Tony Robbins.
yes, like Tony Robbins. I know it sounds like that, but I believe that you're living this life, you're here. You know what you want to do. that person over there is doing what they want to do and they're making it happen. There's no reason why you can't make it happen.
I did like how you mentioned like find your magic system totally encompasses the creative process overall. Finding how you work and just get to that flow immediately and just sit through it.
Well, you actually spun that. That's good, actually, because I was actually talking about literally your magic system for your story if you're writing a fantasy. But I like how you look at it like that. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's dope. I like that. Great.
That is amazing.
But, you know, I want to say, too, because I know sometimes people may hear that and they're like, I mean, that's not helpful, Amory, because you're just saying, like, go do it. And I, you know, like, I get it. I know some people who really want to write. And they're like, but I can't finish. I never finish my stories because I lose steam or because I lose interest or I have a lot of doubt. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. But, you know, my whole thing is like advice for that in general. I'm trying to think of something that's just really practical that can actually help people. I mean, I know sometimes I'm like, go get it. Boo, hoorah. But sometimes that doesn't help. So I would just say finish. Finish what you start. Because every idea is going to come and you're going to write something and there's going to be something else that comes along. And it's like, this is kind of hard. I don't know if I'm feeling this anymore. And is this even good? Oh, but that idea, yes, that idea is really good. But finish the thing that you start because you learn so much more when you're able to write a story from beginning to middle to end. And then you're able to give it to like a critique partner or, you know, a trusted reader and revise. You learn so much more through that boot camp process and you start to see things in your own work too when you're doing that. And I think once people are able to see that process, they're able to see their story becoming more polished. Like when you see that story getting better and you're like, oh, wow. Oh, it is getting better. It kind of like alleviates a little bit of the pressure of that first draft. Like just finish it. Just finish it.
I love that. You definitely communicated that in a very grounded way for a lot of people to take in. When you are done with your brainstorming process, with your 4 or 5 whiteboards, is there software that you like to use when you transfer those notes over digitally? Is there anything that you can recommend to us to check out?
Oh, yes. Well, see, the thing is, with the whiteboards, that's just more like, hey, answer this question. What about this? Oh, yeah, and I can just erase it and not have a bunch of mess. Gotcha. But I do put things in notes, and I actually write using Scrivener. Scrivener, I try to tell all my writing friends, give it a try. But, you know, it's different for everyone. Like, some people love Word. I cannot stand writing in Word. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I don't know if I can stress that enough. But Scrivener is amazing because it can work and kind of morph into how you think. Like, however you see story, whatever you need, it's there.
Yeah.
And if you're a person who sees things and you're like, oh, let me go to this chapter. Oh, take that out. Put that over here. You can see things visually and I'm very visual. So it's amazing. But for some people who may need less of that visual aspect or if they like to use their index cards digitally, you can do that as well. I don't do that, but it's a wonderful – Scrivener is an amazing program. And there's something also called Aeon Timeline that I've just begun to use. And I don't really quite know my way around it super well yet, but I'm learning. I started using that on something, another thing that I'm working on. And it basically enables you to create a timeline for your story.
So oh, shit.
If you're working on something like fantasy or if you're doing something sci-fi, if you're even working on a contemporary and you're just trying to keep track of the months and keep track of what's happening – You input everything in there and then you can visually see when everything in your story is happening. It helps for pacing. And it also helps if you're doing something long term and it's like, wait, this is such and such years after the resurgence. Okay, boom. The program just told you it was 1,500 years after and it happened at this point. And it's a great reference tool. So that's something that's a really good thing too.
That is actually a pretty cool one. I've definitely heard of Scrivener, used it myself, love them. They used to be a sponsor as well for this podcast. Huge fan of them. Yeah. Freaking love them. But I've never heard of Aeon Timeline. And I'm really excited to check that out because I feel like for me, I have an issue with like chronological order stuff where I get flustered. I think for me, that's when index cards help. And that is when Scrivener helps too. But I'm so down to check this out. Thank you for recommending that.
No, I think you might like that.
Yeah, I think I would. Listeners know you mostly because of your music. I hear that you just released a new EP. Can we talk about that?
The EP is called Drive. And it's really because I love driving music. It's basically music that you can put in the car and you can just drive. And it's just conducive to thinking. You kind of zone out to it. I mean, to a certain extent because you're driving. So obviously you don't want to zone out too much. I just wanted like a moment. I really wanted something that felt like the pace was driving, energetic, but at the same time moody. And there's a song on there called Through the Stars. It's one of my favorite songs. And it's basically about wanting to be great and wanting to make something of your life while knowing and understanding that everything that we do as human beings, everything is in vain because we will all be forgotten. I mean, it's a life. It's like each one of us, we're each special and we're each great, but also very small in the grand scheme of things. We're like both at the same time, like really important, but I don't want to say insignificant, but really important, but not the end all be all.
So how long was this process?
It didn't really take a long time. It doesn't take a long time to put things together. It's usually just having to, well, you know, I can't say that because actually another project that I'm working on has been like 6 years in the making or something like that. Maybe five years, maybe 6 years, but I'm working on a project called Cymatica and it's a trilogy. And there are certain songs that I definitely have as a very cinematic sound and they're very big and I have a few songs, but there's just certain things that have to be done really like the right. It has to be done perfectly.
What kind of maybe musical elements we can look out for in Cymatica?
So if you think about how a movie score feels, that's the sound of Cymatica, very big. And it's called Cymatica because it's like the study of visual sound comes from cymatics, because it's like if you put sand on like a plate and you run a vibration through their frequency sound, they'll create like geometric shapes. And if you go from one frequency to the other and then back again, it'll go back to that shape.
Yeah.
We are all vibration and we are all energy. So I really wanted the album to speak, especially with subject matter, with things that we're dealing with in life, not only romantic love, but just what it is to be human, kind of like existential things, but still dealing with relationships and stuff like that too. But I put a lot of also the things that I'm really into. Like I'm really into like esoteric things, like old knowledge, hidden knowledge, things that people don't really necessarily know because they're not taught in school. So I usually put a lot of like subliminal stuff in my music. And for this project especially, it has a lot of that.
It's almost like a foreshadowing of what's to come in your writing world too, like in your books in the future. Like that's what I'm seeing.
I like the way it sounds.
Right?
You make it sound big.
It is big, let me tell you. But that's what I'm getting from it. Everything connects and it's like you're doing it through Cymatica. It's nice.
It's hard. It's hard to, you know, when you're dealing with music, you're talking about a 3 minute song, 2 minutes, 2 minute and 30 seconds to 4 minutes and something. And if it goes longer, especially now, because you don't have to worry about radio plays so much and people are hearing so much of their music on the internet and iTunes and just going to get the music that they want versus having to wait for it. So they can hear things. They can hear things the way it's meant to be heard. You can hear things the way that they're meant to be heard, the way the artist intends. So if it's a 5 minute song, a 6 minute song, you can hear it. But a lot of that's why a lot of times you have to communicate it through vibe and mood in the sounds and the instrumentation. And then you can layer it in with like the lyrics, but it's mostly already in the song. But Cymatica is still a work in progress. So I'm actually working on another thing. It may be an EP. It may be a full length album. I'm not sure. That's going to come most likely before Cymatica because I want to release that sometime in the summer.
Oh my gosh, Amory, so many exciting things happening for you.
Yay.
You're doing it. You're creating it yourself. You're putting it out there. You're making shit happen. And also your amazing team.
You know, you have a lot of things. Everyone can have a vision and you can know what you want to do. But that's why it's really important to surround yourself by people who are supportive. And that doesn't mean that they always agree with what you do, because you also need people to say, I don't really like that song. Or this is good, but this is, you know, the story, it's not there yet. You need that. You need people around you to help you grow and to become better. And then hopefully you can be that way for someone else too.
We always end off asking guests, what are your favorite books that you can recommend? But I know we talked a lot about books earlier. So if there's any other books you want to share, please go ahead.
Okay. So I recommend for writers, of course, Stephen King's On Writing, Sid Field's Screenwriting, and I think Robert McGee's Story. Those I feel like are musts. Must. And also Rainier Marie Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. It's really great. It's basically a young poet who's just asking this great poet, hey, I have this work. Can you tell me if it's any good or not? And then Rilke writes back and says, you don't need me to tell you that. There are reasons why you write. It's about kind of not seeking out that outside validation, but it gets a lot deeper than that. But it's great for any artist to read. And I highly recommend Vicious by V.E. Schwab. That's amazing. I think Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. Excellent. I always recommend Nosferatu by Joe Hill and Clive Barker's Books of Blood.
That is awesome. Now tell us what we can look out for. I know we have the anthology coming up. Is there a set date yet?
The anthology, Because You Love to Hate Me, will be published by Bloomsbury July 2017.
Nice.
And if anyone's interested in just coming and checking me out, I'm online at Do I sound all old school talking about www?
Girl, we just totally dated our age.
HTTP. Right. Amerie.com. That's AmerieE.com. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram. And what else?
And then check out your music.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Amerie.com is the hub. And you can also check me out on iTunes or Tidal or Spotify, however you get your music digitally. All of that cool stuff.
Thank you so much. You've been awesome.
Thanks so much for having me. I had so much fun chatting.
And that wraps up our interview with Amerie. Amerie, thank you again for being so much fun to have on the show. I absolutely loved chatting with you. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. A super fun side fact, me and Amerie were actually chatting for about 2 hours because we had the best time just talking about everything, but we both agreed to hack down the interview to the juiciest parts so you guys can follow along. Please say hi to Amerie over on Twitter at Amerie. That's AmerieIe. And yes, those are two I's. Amerie mentions a ton of incredible books and resources in her episode. So be sure to head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Amerie. I've been loving your messages and emails about the podcast and have been listening to what you're looking for. A lot of you have reached out asking about writing communities and classes, and I'm so excited to tell you more about Gotham Writers. If you're working on your own children's book, anything from a picture book to young adult novel, I really want you to listen to why Gotham is an incredible asset to writers. They started in my favorite city of all time, New York City, my home where a lot of my dreams came true. Just like me, Gotham also believes that everyone has a story to tell and they exist just so they can help writers like you tell your story better. You learn from teachers who are accomplished writers and are amazing at teaching. Through lectures, writing exercises, and workshopping, you learn how to enter the psyche of young people with a grown-up sense of craftsmanship. Gotham teaches writers all the elements of craft in a way that best resonates with young readers, and better yet, you'll learn how to entertain and enlighten young minds. On top of making progress on your work, Gotham will also introduce you to the ways of the business. They've put a lot of heart and soul into creating a safe and structured environment for writers to learn for over 20 years. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/Gotham Writers to check out their classes. They have a super supportive staff that will help you find the course that's perfect for you. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.